CFRU Archives. Just kidding. It's real.
And we're back.
We're real. We're back, yes. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and just a heads up, if you hear any jackhammering during the show, that isn't us. But there's a lot of construction going on in the building, and there may be some extraneous noise, let's say, so...
Just extraneous.
So you want to
get a taste of that? Listen to this week's Guelph Politicast.
I recorded
the intro.
And all you hear is meep, meep.
It's definitely detectable.
Yikes.
Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk the latest in news from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. But this week it will be just the news, and we'll start with the death of Jeffrey Epstein. The billionaire financier was found dead in his jail cell on the weekend, which has led to no shortage of conspiracy theories. So how difficult will it be for the truth to be heard? And then in Alberta, separation is slowly gaining steam, but is this a crank issue, or is there something here to be kind of concerned about? And then finally, the protests in Hong Kong continue, and signs point to China wanting to intervene with, shall we say, extreme severity. And how long will this go on? And is there an end game without one side losing face? But first, we are counting down to an election. You may have heard about that. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau got the news he didn't want to hear, that he has been found guilty of conflict of interest breaches. And that has to do with the old SNC-Lavalin scandal, or as they say on CTV, Lavalin.
SNC-Lavalin?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, there's a very French reporter.
So you can always tell who's bilingual that's the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the ethics commissioner issued his final report, Mario Dion. We'll quote from it: "The authority of the Prime Minister and his office was used to circumvent, undermine, and ultimately attempt to discredit the decision of the Director of Public Prosecutions, as well as the authority of Ms. Wilson-Raybould as the Crown's chief law officer." There were also, quote, "flagrant attempts at influence." So basically, Trudeau violated Section 9 of the Conflict of Interest Act, which prohibits any official responsible for high-level decision-making in government from seeking to influence another person to improperly further another person's private interest. So, he's guilty.
Yes.
Hashtag Trudeau jail.
Is that real? Is it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and he should, well... He doesn't need to do the honorable thing and resign now because there's an election coming. But yeah, this when you first said we were going to talk about pre-election stuff, I was like, yeah, there's a few things going on. And then yesterday is like, boom, this job is like, oh my God, I need to do more homework.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the ethics commissioner was a relatively new position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it came around in the Harper years.
Mm-hmm.
Have I got it right? Because the numbers seem to be... I didn't get any specific numbers on it, but Harper was also found guilty of ethics violations as well?
Yeah, he was found in contempt of Parliament.
Yeah. So I think what's going to happen now that this office has been established, that every single prime minister that we're going to see from now until they stop doing this is going to be found guilty of some kind of violation. This isn't me defending Trudeau. This is me just telling it like it is. They're all going to do it because it seems very easy to overstep in this situation. And Trudeau's response was fairly interesting. It's I accept the report. I accept the responsibility. But what did he say? I have some, he didn't say issues with it. I disagree with some of the things that he said. It was the ultimate contradiction. And he didn't do like what I did there and go, too many times, which means that he was obviously, it was fairly scripted. I should imagine that he was reading from the teleprompter or his notes
he
rather than freewheeling.
Yeah, he disagreed with Dion that the contact was improper, which was kind of the point.
Right.
And I guess it's like one of those, like, was it improper? I think Jody Wilson-Raybould's point was like she was like feeling the pressure to send the SNC-Lavalin, which is accused of, again, bribery and fraud, from basically a 10-year stretch in Libya, trying to bribe public officials to the tune of some $50 million, allegedly. They wanted a deferred prosecution, or the PMO, I should say, was pushing for a deferred prosecution as opposed to going to a full-blown trial, because that could theoretically result in SNC-Lavalin being unable to bid on government contracts, which could theoretically cost jobs, which is why Trudeau was pushing so hard to get that deferred prosecution. Theoretically, I mean, again, it's like he wasn't – I think when we typically think of conflict of interest, we think of like somebody like – personally making money off of, like, for example, Trump and his hotel in Washington, D.C. Like, that's a definite conflict of
interest. Yeah, Mulroney getting paper bags of money, Airbus, etc. like that.
Or Jean Chrétien giving contracts to friends of the Liberal Party to promote, Quebec unity.
They all do it.
Right. And
they all do it.
There was
to some degree,
there was
they
kind
all
of
do
no...
it.
Like, Trudeau wasn't making money off of it, but it could be read, like, because it's his backyard, it's his writing, trying to protect jobs of locals, trying to make himself look good. And I think that's where the conflict of interest lies. But, of course, if it's a conflict of interest for every politician to try and use their power to make themselves look good, as you said, everybody's guilty.
And did you read Jody Wilson-Raybould's response? I was having some technical issues. The font was too small. For my aging eyes. And she was, from what I heard, she said, this is complete vindication of her.
I think so.
Which was never, I don't know if that was ever really in doubt. And Jane Philpott chimed in as well, something similar, not a two-pager, but she was like, yeah.
I think you're right. I think nobody was doubting her. I think people were unfairly saying like she was showboating and trying to make it out like she was standing morally above everyone else. I think she was in this case. She was the chief law enforcement officer and made an informed decision on this. And it's, I mean, there are a couple of things too. And this could have like pulled the plug on this at any time. Trudeau and Butts and everybody could have gone to her and said like, hey, is there any way like we're trying to protect quote unquote good middle class jobs, trademark.
And those who want to get them or something,
right.
Yeah.
Is there any way we can, look at a deferred prosecution for this? And she could go away with that and like, all right, I'll look at it and then come back and say, no, this is bigger than that. We have to go to trial. We have to send a message. And at that point, they had the choice to go, okay, well, thanks for looking into it. But instead, they kept hammering and hammering and hammering and hammering. And I think people feel like, and it could be a legit feeling, and it could be, just sort of the way we think of how women are pushed in the workplace, that they kept hammering away on her like this, like they didn't trust her to get to the decision they want, feeling that the decision they wanted was the right one. And, that's sort of typical of, I think, a lot of workplace culture, that a lot of women feel like they're being bullied and that men think they can bully them. And I think it was just a constant screw up from the word go. Again, if they just said, okay, well, thanks for looking into it, and then gone about their affairs. Or if it had come out from the word go and said, like, Jody Wilson-Raybould's leaving the AG, we have a disagreement about...
We're going to dump her down to another portfolio.
Right, instead of doing this bait and switch where it's Scott Bryson's fault because he left Cabinet.
Yeah, that was handy, or tried to be handy, but not really.
And so it's just, this is another instance of the cover-up is worse than the crime.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether they expected to hear the words SNC-Lavalin.
Well, I hope not.
But now it's back, and they're going to write it right up until the writ drops.
Well, they're going to try.
We'll see if it catches fire again.
I was watching a panel this morning on CTV News Channel, and it's one of those like abysmal, here's a liberal strategist, here's an NDP strategist.
They just woke up. They only had one copy.
And the conservative's like, no, fire Trudeau, blah, blah, blah. And liberal's like, what's the big deal? And NDP's like, hey, we're here too. But
was there a green to speak of?
No, there was no green. Was there a green?
No people
Get
party?
Out of here.
No people party?
Was there
a people party people there?
Oh, my goodness.
I guess we should talk about the others for a bit, eh?
Well, I just want to make this one point that it's August. not a lot of people are paying attention to politics. Like, not a lot of people live in this stuff like we do.
And our listeners, of course.
And yeah, well, I mean, people who are listening are you know, vaguely interested at least in what's going on politically. But
we strive that you'll be vaguely interested.
Number two is, like, this is like one of those really inside baseball stories where it's like somebody contravened rules and you have to know the rules and you have to know the act. And like the media has really fallen down on this because they don't explain like why this is. Like, I understand Jesse Brown's point on Twitter yesterday. It's like, oh, so the prime minister violates ethics rules and nobody cares. It's like, well, I don't think it's that nobody cares. It's like nobody's really explained this properly, so that it's all about the scandal and how it affects the horse race and who's up and who's down. And it's not the media hasn't really explained why this is improper and why this is a big deal and put it in that context.
Yeah. There's no charges. It's just ethics.
And as Michael Sona pointed out on Twitter, that when he was campaigning in 2011 and was door knocking, he hardly met anyone who was concerned about Stephen Harper being found in contempt of parliament, because, I mean, people are concerned about the kitchen table stuff.
Jobs, like, taxes.
Will I have a job? Will I be able to, you know, see a doctor quickly? Will we have an environment in the years to come? And on and on and on.
It's almost as if the scandal is expected.
Yeah, it's baked in. I mean, it's baked into the thing. But that's the thing that will hurt Trudeau the most, is it was supposed to be a new day. It was supposed to be sunny ways. And 4 years later, it's
cloudy
it's back to the sunny who do you period. Hate most? Who do you hate least? Yeah.
So we found out the debate dates. English October 7th, French October 10th. We also found out that People's Party, Maxime Bernier, not invited. Considering there are no MPs, I don't think he counts because he wasn't elected as a People's Party MP.
Right.
He's not going to be in the debate. But Elizabeth May will be. Because there are two now?
There are two.
Two. That's better.
I think if we go back and we listen to everyone who said that Elizabeth May should be included in the debates, I think if you were of that opinion, I think Maxime Bernier should be in the debates.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Because, I mean, say what you want about the People's Party, and there has been stuff said, but they have 300.
They've said a lot of it.
They have 330 acclaimed candidates.
Wow.
The most of any party at this point.
So there you go.
It's legit.
Well,
it's,
and he can appeal to, right? There's some sort of appeal process saying, give us a half dozen ridings that you think you might win, and we'll think about it. And they'll probably just say no.
Well, I don't. I.
Well, there have been times.
I would be hard pressed.
Five,
to,
right? With the blocks in, right? So, I guess it's five now, and then possibly six with Bernier.
Well, it's just a matter of, like, if you're a national party running a national campaign, and you have candidates in almost every riding, if not every riding, you should be in that leader's debate. I understand why you don't want to have, like, the leader of the Christian Heritage Party. They have, like, a couple of dozen people. Or the leader of the None of the Above Party. Or the leader of the Communist Party, which, again, that, like, will probably have, like, a couple of dozen people across the country.
Used to do, and, well, I mean, we do. We interview the leaders. But I think it was Much Music used to make a point of, like, getting John Trammell on, who will definitely run somewhere.
Oh, no doubt.
We'll have to get him.
I wonder
him.
If he's been in, I'll look that up.
We'll have to get him on. And I guess we talked about the Liberals at length there, but it seems like it's raining money in a lot of places. Did you notice this too? It's like announcement. I think on Monday alone, there was 20 announcements of money. Guelph's getting some money. So the money's coming. So I wonder if there's an election coming, do you think?
Well, Guelph is. Yeah, there was an announcement last week about at Second Choice, which I was there at. There was an announcement this morning at Innovation Guelph, which I was not there for.
There's so many. How can you spread yourself out? I don't know.
I know. It's weird.
So all the leaders are on the trail already, even though we haven't had the official kickoff. Everybody working on their carbon footprint. Zigzagging across this large nation, trying to be everywhere. But I think it sounds like they're trying to concentrate mostly on swing ridings, narrow margin ridings. You know, ones where there is a chance at this point. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody will make it to all the ridings. You never know, though. That would take some kind of miracle or the invention of the transporter, which I'm desperately waiting for, so I don't have to take a high-powered yacht to Europe next time in the other direction. Like,
is that a reference to
Greta
Thunberg?
Is coming. Yeah, we're going to try and get her on. Sorry, did I tell you
that
yet? Sure. We're trying to get everybody on. So I'm trying to get Taylor Swift on too, you know, but anyway.
Oh my God.
Did you find the thing? Is it?
I found John Tremel's website, but it was built in 1996.
That was my guess.
So it's practically unreadable. And I found his Facebook page, but he is...
A paperclip came up and said, it looks like you're looking for John Tremel's website.
Yeah, I'm just scanning through here on Wikipedia.
John, if you're listening, because we know you have in the past, give us a call.
He lost election number 98 on February the 25th. That's the last entry at... And Wikipedia. And
then he went back to gambling.
So this is either going to be number 99 or number 100 for him. I don't think
He's already the winningest, isn't he? He's already like the champ in terms of.
Well, yeah, he has the Guinness World Record.
He's the Guinness World
Record.
So
he's the Guinness World Record.
Everything else from this point on is just gravy. So congratulations to John Tremel. He won something. Although a world record isn't really winning, is it?
Hey, we're talking about him.
That's right. Okay, let's stop talking about him. Talk about other conspiracies? Or conspiracy theorists?
Good segue.
I tried.
So we've probably all heard about this guy, Jeffrey Epstein, who he was a convicted predator, convicted sexual predator. He went to jail for, I think, a year in 2008 in what is now considered rather a sweetheart deal, one that was negotiated by former Labor Secretary Alex Acosta, who resigned, I think, last month out of the wake of new reporting in, I believe, the Miami Herald. The reporter's name is Julie K. Brown. She looked into the situation, found that there were some irregularities, including Acosta, who was a prosecutor at the time, not informing victims that he had reached this deal for Epstein to plead guilty, and it was given a deferred sentence. Epstein was then given rather a sweetheart deal, considering the things he was convicted of. He actually spent several hours in the day out of prison in his office, receiving visitors, doing business, and even had a personal driver to take him to and from prison. So it's like really kind of like a vacation
Camp
for
cupcake,
him.
Cupcake, yeah.
Anyway, new charges were filed against him in a New York court last month, and he was found dead in his cell on Saturday morning. Initial conclusions were that he had committed suicide. That he had took his own life, that he had hung himself. Immediately, conspiracy theories sprung up because of his connections to rather high-profile people, including the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, the former president of the United States, Bill Clinton, and current member of the royal family, Prince Andrew.
Among others.
So many others. Yeah. Like, he has so many celebrity connections. It's crazy.
Kevin Spacey and...
Oh, yeah.
Chris Tucker? Is that another? Yeah.
Well, yeah, like
not all necessarily implicated in the.
No, like nobody's been implicated, but I mean, he had like.
You're gonna have friends. You're wealthy.
He had
other
friends
wealthy people
in high places in various aspects. Anyway, the immediate presumption, and I knew this was gonna happen when I saw that news break on Saturday morning, that there was gonna be a conspiracy because he's connected to so many high level people and whom he supposedly had dirt on. That he was killed. By. Nefarious forces, and to make matters worse, President Trump retweeted one of them, and it sounds like he just did it because the guy had a lot of followers. You see, he had a lot of followers.
He's a very reputable conservative. You can call him a pundit, but he's actually this guy's a comedian. Have I got it right? What's his name again?
Mm-hmm.
It's a retweet, so it's okay. But it's like you know, people retweet garbage all the time.
Donald Trump certainly does.
And of course, I think Trump is playing it. Well, first of all, it's really easy to see how people could come up with a conspiracy of this. Today, and it's the 15th of August today, this afternoon's story is like Epstein's neck was broken. Now, that's consistent with somebody hanging themselves, but there's lots of broken bones. So, of course, this is all going to play into, okay, somebody broke his neck, right? And not to totally play into what the conspiracy people are saying, but... You can see, considering the power and the realm where these people operate, it is totally not without possibility that something like that, this could happen. But once again, not proven, right?
Right.
But Trump seems to be hitting on Clinton a little too hard, right? I know he's always gone after crooked Hillary and whatnot, but this is like, Was that number with the number of plane rides Clinton took that Trump said, is that even remotely accurate? He was on the plane 27, 28 times. It keeps going on. How is only on the plane? Why would he say he was on the plane four times? Like, where is this going, dude? Like, you're just, this is that sort of deflect, defer. I'm going to talk about Clinton. But all the pictures that come up that aren't doctored, like legitimate pictures and the videotape from 30 years ago, Trump and Epstein were pals. Trump and Epstein were really tight. And it almost seems like Trump is trying to do this a deflection of sorts by harping on Clinton, who is no saint, as we know.
No.
But yeah, you can sort of see the origin point of this. It's like, well, it was a really powerful, a lot of really powerful people. Prince Andrew, powerful, maybe a bit, but I mean, there is the photo. There's some, the photo evidence making the rounds is of him with this. She is a girl.
Yeah.
With people that aren't her parents. I mean, that's like creep show right there.
And he is like,
does it prove anything?
Yeah.
I don't know, but
I mean, he's like, at this point, he's like 34th in line for the throne or something.
Yeah. He's a minor royal, but at the same time, he's still within, he's in the realm, right?
Well, he's always been realm, like sort of tabloid fodder. I mean, like going back to when he married Fergie and they were both sort of.
And prior to that, he was dating she was a posed in Playboy or something. And
no, I know. I can't remember
Star,
her name.
Is that her name? For 10 points. It doesn't matter, but he was considered to be a Playboy. And I guess that to some
Save
degree,
it for Trivia Night at the SIP Club.
Exactly. I need to go to that. We need a team, dude. We need a team.
Yeah, it's one of those conspiracies where it's not like QAnon, where it's completely ludicrous, where it involves like JFK Jr. Faking his death for 25 years and, you know, people working behind the scenes and like, you know, pedophile rings in basements of pizza places where there is no basement and things like that. It's
Hillary has something to do with it.
It's relatively, like, go all the way back to the 70s and the conversation. You know, it's relatively easy to believe that someone could take someone else out. But the difference between then and now is that it just seems so much more easier for people to slide into these pockets of conspiracy belief, ludicrous or not. And as we said, like in this case, it's not so ludicrous to think that somebody might have had Epstein killed. Not that we're saying that happened, but it's just so much more easier for people to sort of find themselves in that trap and to enter that trap. And so when somebody in a position of authority, like the President of the United States, starts making unbased claims, especially about people he's, you know, political.
He used to roll with.
He used to roll with the Clintons, too. They were at his wedding.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just wholly irresponsible. And part of the problem is that report you mentioned about the multiple breaks in his neck, that wasn't even like the official autopsy report. According to the New York coroner, his cause of death is still pending, which is not unusual because people want to wait till all the facts are in before they render judgment. But because someone leaked this to whoever, and they got it from two sources,
CNN.
So they did a double blind, like it's two sources, two independent sources verified. I read an interview with a forensic expert who said this break, which is the hyoid bone, which is near your Adam's apple,
the front
if
neck,
you are a man, it's a common break if someone is strangled in a homicide, but it's also a common break if you're an older person and you hang yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's...
He was late 60s, right? Like, wasn't it?
He was not a spring chicken.
No.
So, you know, here's another thing where you're kind of getting half the facts, where depending on your biases, someone like you or I who want to get all the facts will wait until we hear that piece of information. Like, yes, it's a sign that... Yeah, he could have been killed, but it's also a sign that he's an old guy that strangled himself. But if your bias is towards he was killed, a la, say, Vince Foster, another popular conspiracy theory that hasn't gone away, that Bill Clinton has had people killed, including his former advisor, Vince Foster. Mm. There was actually an Unsolved Mysteries about it, too, because I've been watching Unsolved Mysteries on Amazon, and they actually had a whole segment about, did Bill Clinton kill Vince Foster? Which is... It's wild that it was like that kind of mainstream. But
and Ted Cruz is the Zodiac Killer. Yeah.
Well, that's it too.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is pointing, like, Ted Cruz's father helped kill JFK. It's like, well, where's the evidence of that? None.
Yeah, well, when you spend your time in the silo and in the echo chamber and you don't get out of it at all, this is what you get, right? This, and it just, you know, when the commander in chief is playing into it, it's unfortunate in a way. Like, it's just, but we, you know, we know this is how, I almost called him Trudeau. This is how, got the other election on the brain. This is how Trump rolls. But it's not as if the other people in the orbit are off the hook. Particularly, right. Is it Ghislaine Maxwell, Robert Maxwell's daughter, who was Epstein's partner at some point.
Right.
I'm not sure if she still was, but it has been alleged that she was in on the procurement, almost Carla Bernardo style.
Well, I mean, that seems to be a pattern if you look at, like, the Nixium cult, too, is that, you know, the actress there, Allison Mack, was procuring women for the main guy, Rainier. So that seems to be a pattern of these things, is that there's a woman who is sort of the consigliere of, like, recruiting the victims.
I thought it was interesting that I don't know if you saw any of the drone footage of the FBI and the New York police raiding the island, but, you know, forgetting that it's within jurisdiction since it's U.S. Virgin Islands, right? Mm-hmm. So I just thought, you don't think of New York cops being down with their vests on. And then what were they trying to do? They put, like, Home Depot boxes up in the window to kind of block the view of this drone. Drones are amazing. I don't know why anybody has a traffic chopper anymore. You just set up a drone. Why do you have a traffic copter? Anyway, that was a total aside, but it's the island is playing into the conspiracy with the temple on the island, and I don't know, that's what the QAnon.
It's very Ian Fleming.
I never go that deep into QAnon territory. Like, it just sort of, if I see things about them, it's fine. But I'm not going to that zone. That wasn't construction. That was this. What is the sound of one pen falling? That's it.
Yeah.
So what they'll find on the island, we don't know, but they've taken computers, they've taken all kinds of evidence. It's going to take forever to go through all of this evidence. Who knows who else is going to be subpoenaed or pulled in for this investigation. But sounds like it's going to be everybody wants a full investigation. And it sounds like that is what is going to happen, as full as possible, even though the main person is now deceased.
And another thing this is highlighted too, and maybe we'll make this the last point on this, is that there's a lot of death in the U.S. prison system, and there also seems to be a lot of gaps in their personnel, and that's the big thing that's happened, is that there are like 6,000 people, like 6,000 positions that haven't been filled in the New York penal system. Mm-hmm. So this main facility, this Metropolitan Corrections Center, one of the guards was not a trained sort of prison guard. So the one of the people who was on that night.
Here's a gun and a stick. Stand there.
Basically.
Extreme overtime as well, right?
Yeah.
Whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, and they weren't following regulations, like checking every 30 minutes. So 372 people died in the jail system in 3,000 facilities in 2014. So basically there are 50 deaths for every 1,000 inmates in the U.S. penal system.
Oh, the U.S. I thought you were going to just say New York.
No, this is the U.S. penal system.
Still, that's massive.
But I mean, that's a lot. And no one's really, you know, there's all sorts of other kinds of violence. And the U.S. prison system is packed. It is chock-a-block. It is overpopulated.
Well, because a lot of them are privately run, and it's a profit-driven thing.
Exactly.
It's probably a topic for another day.
It's a topic for another day, but if there's
it's not false.
Let's call it additional good to come out of this. It highlights that there are very particular problems in the New York prison system that even high-profile inmates like Jeffrey Epstein can, it looks like, take their own life, and the prison just was unable to respond to it and prevent it from happening. So, on that happy note, definitely. We're going
to
take a break and then come back and talk about Alberta separation.
Two weeks after.
vacation time to get away. Oh, wait, we're back on. I'm singing along with the Go-Go's. One of my faves from way back, which Adam tweeted this.
Did I?
Song, yes, and then I jumped right on it. And retweeted it, and so I thought it just happens to be in the archives from 1980-something. I'm going to say two. But the hits just keep on
giving. Why don't I look it up?
Yeah, it's okay. But anyway, the Go-Go's from there. This is actually from a greatest hits called Greatest Hits for Promotional Use Only. But this is also well-aged. 1990. So their greatest hits was in 1990, and I don't know if they're still going, probably. They're probably doing the casino circuit or something, but... I still love them anyway.
Yeah, Vacation came out in 1982.
Whoa!
On the album Vacation, it went to number 8 on the charts.
But always number 1 in our hearts.
It's the second highest ranking Go-Go song after we got the beat.
Oh, we got the beat, yes.
Which ranked at number 2 in 1981. And now, back to the countdown.
A brief history of the Go-Go's here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
A brief history of the Go-Go's, indeed. All right. So, over in Alberta, they're not too pleased with the rest of Canada.
Surprise. In my opinion.
No, fair. That's fair. So, they did a poll the other week to see how many people in Alberta would be interested in separating from Canada. And the good news is that 44% do strongly disagree with separating. The bad news is that is down from 58% who used to strongly disagree. Although 62% do think that Alberta should remain a part of Canada altogether. But still, that's over one third of Albertans who are thinking about separating one way or t'other.
Yeah, this kind of grumbling always surfaces around election time. I'm sure if we go back in time far enough, I'm sure there's polls. It's like, 25% of people, pick the number. There's always the dissatisfied. But out in Alberta, they seem to just start parties all the time. Like when you think back to the Reform Party, which is what, 30 odd years ago now, it was the slogan, I think, was the West wants in. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as if they wanted to separate, but they wanted a better deal, I guess, when they ended up with a merger eventually. But that, they were maybe the initial Western dissatisfaction party that did really well, because there's been lots over the years that have appeared and then they disappear. And I saw one, they were talking about a hypothetical Western Independence Party. Would you vote for this party? That was earlier this year. What is it like every 6 months now this comes up? Alberta's more the Quebec of now. Like years ago, it was always Quebec. Quebec wants to separate Quebec. We didn't even hear about that anymore.
No.
It's not even on the radar. It's all about Alberta. Now, something Jason Kenney said about it was, what was his line? It was actually pretty good. He said he would rather see,
He'd rather separate Trudeau from the PMO than separate Alberta from Canada.
So that was a clever twist of a phrase.
It was clever in its way, but I mean, it's still like Trudeau is the cause of all our issues. Just like it was like before the election earlier this year, like Rachel Notley was the cause of all the issues.
The root of all evil. Although he did call her my esteemed colleague?
Well, that's nice.
Kenny's softened now that he's got the big chair.
That's nice, considering like most people who love Kenny would probably use a B word when they're talking about Rachel Notley.
Yes, she was quite beaten on, I guess, during the election. But anyway,
yeah,
that's another story. But it sort of plays into the story too. So,
but I mean, it's unlike, and this was I read this point in an editorial I read that unlike the Quebec separation, there's kind of like no organization, like no political organization that's really pushing for this. This is kind of like a grassroots kind of thing. Like there's no Bloc Québécois equivalent. Like you mentioned the Alberta Independence Party, which was a party in the last Alberta election, which got, I think, 0.7% of the vote.
Ooh. But now it's the Wexit Party, right? Somebody's trying to get this rolling.
They're trying to, the Wexit, Western exit, I guess.
They seem to be on a little bit of a tour. I saw one comment about how they wanted to become an official party. I think the person spearheading it is a former RCMP officer or something. Mm-hmm. What was the phrase? Me. Committed to economic liberty, social stability, and Alberta sovereignty. But what was the other line? Oh, not subordinate to Canada, the British Crown, or the UN. So there's hints of, I don't know, yellow vestige there, maybe? Yellow vestige, is that even a thing?
It
you know what
now.
I'm saying? Well, he's mentioning the UN. The UN is something that doesn't generally come up in election conversations. So it's like, oh, what are you trying to say there? So
right. I don't get us out of the UN, like that's tired and old. But
it keeps coming up within certain circles.
Right.
And we know what those circles are.
I was reading a thread and somebody made the point that, well, if Alberta separates, does that make it easier to get pipelines built? Because, you know, why would Canada then work with them to build pipelines through our territory? And then they would also have to set up a system where they could then work through with the United States if they want to get pipelines through United States territory. And oh, by the way, the three Western states that you have to, you know, put your pipeline through in order to get your oil to the ocean are Washington, Portland, and California, Washington, Oregon, and California, all not exactly, you know, fossil fuel friendly, right leaning jurisdictions, shall we say? If you think it's tough to get through BC, try getting through Washington State or Oregon, or last but not least, California, which has like the highest fuel emission standards in North America.
Yeah, they must do some kind of deal with Saskatchewan, go down through North Dakota, pass through Guelph, North Dakota. I don't know.
But I mean,
these
still,
are
that
mythical
get them,
pipelines that are
going
like,
the other way doesn't get them anywhere close to the ocean, which is like where we're supposed to be trying to take these pipelines, or where they're trying to take these pipelines, right, to get them to open water. And I saw somebody respond and say, like, well, people in Alberta seem to be under the opinion that if Alberta, being its own country, is landlocked, then international law would demand that they would have to have access to open water. So at the same time these people are like worried about UN one world government rule, they're also kind of depending on it to get pipelines built to open sea because the international law demands it when you're a landlocked country, which is something I've never heard of.
They'll have to dig a canal or something.
Yeah.
Get a bunch of temporary foreign workers in to do that. That sounds like, well, no, that's the kind of thing I think they would do. I don't know if you saw the jobs numbers for Alberta. It's something like down 14,000. It's like more than half of the nation's job sinking job rate, which I think we're down 24,000. Mm-hmm. We being Canada, not us. And that was just in July. And a lot of it seems that Edmonton took the bulk of the hit. I guess it's probably oil sands up and down and whatnot. Something like 5,400 jobs, part-time jobs lost in Edmonton. So anybody that thought that the new Kenny regime was going to be the panacea to fix everything, that hasn't quite happened.
Well, no, that blame has then moved to Trudeau because it's Trudeau's threatening national unity by not moving fast enough on pipelines.
And of course, all of that plays into the people that are already like, well, maybe we should go it alone. Maybe we should just separate from the Canada.
Right.
But as to whether, you know, it's I saw a bit of a video on Global and of this Wexit party meeting. It was like some ex-reform guy showed up. It's just white dudes in MAGA hats generally who all hate Trudeau. You can see it sort of oozes out of them. It's like they don't need to wear a button or anything. It's like, right, you can just tell that these dudes, and it is mostly dudes, hate Trudeau and the carbon tax and taxes in general. All of that stuff. All the stuff that pretty much Kenny went to bat for and whatnot. I don't know how this would be any different. It's like, well, we're the same. We just don't want the UN involved, or we don't want the Queen involved, or whoever. Prince Andrew. Why do we pay for him?
It's like oil's the new coal, right?
Oh yeah.
Coal is slumping, and it has nothing to do with how much Trump loves coal or how much people want to save coal. It's just the nature of the beast. Because what happened this week is we get announcements from Ford and GM that they are ratcheting down production of hybrids and bumping up production of electric.
Yep.
So we're heading to a system where there's gas and electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it becomes a matter of time till we see electric cars go up and gas cars go down.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a thing now with, you know, the Koch brothers are pulling their money out of the oil sands. There's you know, maybe it has to do with like the government situation and the fight over like, do we build a pipeline? Do we not build a pipeline? You know, we got regulations coming. When are they coming? Will they stop us from building pipelines? Maybe it's all that political uncertainty that is forcing like moneyed interests to take money out of the sands. Or but if you're also thinking long term.
Yeah.
You know, is that worth your investment too? And on top of it all is that there's these incidents of like companies abandoning wells and just leaving them like a mess.
That happened the day of the Alberta election, yeah. Wasn't it? Where it was like that came down. It's like, well, there's 4,000 wells. We're broke. There's nothing we can do. And then and they don't want federal money to help with that either.
Yeah.
Because we don't want anything from Trudeau at all. So what's going to happen? Alberta just going to be this cesspool of catchment ponds and tailings ponds. And
yeah, which
you
will
just
eventually
wanna, like,
hit.
Crap on the whole province. And then what?
Right. Which will eventually hit.
Like Mad Max.
Like underground water sources that
Absolutely.
Feed into people's drinking water. And you're going to be having people going on CBC talking about how they can light their tap water on fire.
The farmers will be, you know. Sort of the other element to Alberta's main economic engines. But yeah, I mean, with the Koch brothers, I mean, it's like, it's not to sound like the rabid Marxist, but in true capitalist fashion, they're not going to back a turkey, right? Something that's on the way down. If they are de-investing, then, you know, the writing should be on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
If they start investing in like the lithium fields of Chile, you'll know something's definitely up, right?
Right. It's just there's tremendous uncertainty. It's not Trudeau's fault. I mean, I don't think he's helping either. But I mean, at the same time,
no.
He did buy the freaking Trans Mountain pipeline. And that is a decision.
Probably also in Turkey.
Well, I mean, actually, you know, there was polling done that like a lot of Canadians thought that was a fair decision, like to buy the pipeline. But this goes back to something I said a while ago, is that if Trudeau thinks he's going to make an appeal to people in Alberta by showing them how pro-pipeline he is, he can't. The message is already baked in the pudding that he's the anti-pipeline guy. And, you know, no amount of kowtowing to that constituency is going to convince them of that. And this is proof that you have more and more people, even if it is like a slow burn kind of revolution, that more and more people are saying that they can go it alone. And who knows where this will be if Trudeau gets reelected and we have another 4 years and another 4 years of, you know, middling business interest in the oil patch and still no pipelines built, which is entirely possible.
All I'm thinking now is pudding, but anyway.
All right. Well, it is almost dinner time.
Tar sand pudding. Yeah, that's probably it.
speaking of people who are hungry for freedom, Hong Kong, the protests have not gone away, even though they pulled the original sort of flashpoint of the protests, the new extradition law. The chief executive of Hong Kong, whose name's Carrie Lam, who, I mean, it's not spelled like the animal lamb, but I mean, there's almost like some sort of allegory in there. It's almost
the lamb to slaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sacrificial. She declared that the extradition bill was dead on July 9th. However, it can still come back with about 12 days notice, which is why people in Hong Kong are still in a fervor, shall we say. So on Monday, they seized the, I want to get the name right, the Chuk Lin Kok Airport in Hong Kong. It is the second busiest airport in Asia, eighth biggest in terms of the number of passengers. So it is no small feat that they basically shut down all outgoing flights from the airport for 2 days. On the second day, it looked like Hong Kong police were going to go in there and break it up by almost literally breaking heads. But the situation seemed to calm down. The protesters have since sort of moved out of the airport, although there is a small contingent there. Flights going in and out are back to normal. We're still concerned because the Chinese army is massing on the just outside of town with big black vehicles and big black soldiers and big black tac gear.
Shenzhen, right, which is right on the line. There was a satellite shot of a stadium full of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That's them sending a heavy message without being heavy-handed. Is it just posturing? I don't know. But I don't know if you saw the video of them, the vehicles coming off the the off ramp, and then there was this dun 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 music and choral, like you see in any I'm going to say North Korean propaganda video, but you see a lot of the Russians do it too. This dun dun dun,
right?
That type of music. Like there's a film happening. It's I'm not saying that the police were restrained because they weren't, and the takeover of the airport was because there was one incident in particular. It was a woman with this bleeding eye, and that's become a symbol too. People are putting patches over their eyes and writing these very apologetic notes, like "We're sorry for the inconvenience that we've taken over the airport." I'm holding a you can't see this. I'm holding a sign up to Adam like "We're so sorry we've taken over the airport." Strategically,
you can't see your eye patch either.
Yeah, strategically, if you want to get your message out there, it's a good move to do something
like
that.
Well, that's an appeal to like Western media is to have like English signs. And yeah,
it's like it's akin to a general strike. If you want people to pay attention, you need to do things like this. It's pretty gutsy considering what's looming in the background. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that one shot where they turned the tables on a cop and they were beating on him and he pulled his gun out and surprisingly didn't shoot anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this weird relationship between the police there where they, I don't know, you see it, they hold up that sign, it says warning tear smoke, which is like a bad translation, like
right.
It's like caution, we're gonna tear gas you, like that doesn't happen here. They just bomb you with the canisters, and then the protesters have come up with this clever way of diffusing tear gas canisters using, you should watch it online, I'm not gonna repeat it, I don't want to be
They also use like kind of like laser pointers to
They have all
to ward people to ward
wild...
the police off, which is kind of like a switch on, you know, laser scopes on assault
rifles.
Shine
them in their eyes and they won't come at us. Now, of course they're coming at them, but so this it's still simmering. It's not as heavy as it was on Monday and Tuesday, but the Chinese government, like central government, is you know, they're calling it near terrorism. And I think when they remove when they remove the near qualifier, will be when they will probably move in, because then it'll be clear that the Hong Kong administration has lost control. So or at least in the Chinese government's eyes, it is this weird. Well, not weird, but the system that was decided on, you've probably heard it. It's like, what is it again? Two governments?
Two systems.
One country, two systems.
Yeah.
So that works to a degree, but then if it becomes clear that Hong Kong can't be controlled and their economy is being, because I'm not sure how much the Hong Kong engine fuels China itself, but it's a lot. I don't have a hard number on that, but this is like, there's a little cash cow. And somebody mentioned Macau too. And I was like,
well,
I kind of forgot about Macau.
Macau's right next to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
That's why.
And Macau's like a gambling paradise.
It's the Las Vegas of the Orient.
Yes. So, of course, lots of cash.
But I mean, it's having an effect on tourism in Macau because people don't want to like be in the vicinity of Hong Kong when the crap goes down. So there is a financial stake. And the more uncertainty there is, and the more this goes on, and it's already been going on for like 10 weeks, the more people aren't going to invest in Hong Kong or, you know, want to go to Hong Kong for like business meetings or whatever.
Or even pass through to go somewhere else, which is probably a bit of a hub as well for Asia.
Yeah, right. And the tricky part is like, where does this end? Because Xi's not going to back down. Because it's going to be a capitulation to protesters, which is going to give other protesters ideas.
Didn't Trump say you should just go talk to them? What? Like Trump would do that, right?
Trump,
just go talk to them.
Well, Donald Trump was like, everyone needs to just be like safe. Everyone just needs to be cool
and
be safe.
Yeah, all sides
like,
again, right? Though,
really?
Come on. Yeah, exactly.
Like that's all you have to offer as president. I mean, I know that. You're not equipped to do the job, but is somebody like not giving you like proper advice? I know they aren't, but like the protesters themselves, they have five goals. The complete withdrawal of the extradition bill, which they've kind of half done. Withdraw using the word riot from describing the protesters. The unconditional release of the protesters and dropping the charges. An independent inquiry into police behavior. And then the... the implementation of universal suffrage, which seems like something you add on to the end to make it a 5-point list.
Yes, we need 5 points. Four is unlucky. We need 5 points.
Because it seems like they could do the four, and they could probably call it a win, and everyone could call it a win and walk away happy. But
there may be some superstition there. Is it four or eight is bad?
Oh, good question.
I think it's four. Like, you don't... I know, four is...
Yeah, five is lucky.
Fours and eights, I think, are out. Like,
you could be right about that.
So maybe that's why. Because I noticed the list here, the attack on campuses has 5 points as well. So maybe it's like the perfect number of points. So.
Well, I think it's just like people like five. Anyway, Pentacle Star, you know.
How many Bams and Bam Bam? Five.
Yeah. It's the Illuminati.
Where are we going with
it's
this?
It's the Illuminati and the Rand Corporation.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, no, it's... yeah, it could be. It could very well be. But I think... And I've been seeing this commentary a lot. And like, not to make it about Donald Trump, but I mean... There's very obviously a feeling out there that like the world's kind of going to hell on a handcart, and it's because like no one's guiding the handcart anymore. No one's got a hand on the handcart. It's all just kind of like rolling down a hill. Like all the stuff in the cart is spilling out because you have the situation in Hong Kong. You have stuff in the Persian Gulf with Iran and Saudi Arabia and Yemen. You have Brexit and all the stuff going on in the EU. You
stock market
stuff
sinking.
In Kashmir. Kashmir was another flashpoint this week, and there's the drilling downstairs. Kashmir in India.
I thought we were going to make it.
We almost made it. But yeah, Kashmir in India is boiling over again, and like that could be like a highly dangerous nuclear situation. And like speaking of dangerous nuclear situations, North Korea is still out there. Kim Jong-un's firing off short-range missiles, which doesn't mean much in the United States, but means an awful lot to people in Japan and South Korea, who, you know, Trump is probably honking off when he gets out there and says, I got another beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un. It's like, who cares?
We had a wonderful meal.
Yeah, it's like, you're getting beautiful letters? What does that mean? And he's like, oh, I can't release the letter, but it's beautiful. Take my word for it. And it's just...
Is it written in cursive? Is
I wonder, but it's
gold
just like...
pen. It's written in a gold pen.
Is it like
pen.
Translated? Like, do they send him both like the original Korean version and the translated version? Like, I don't know. But the point
somebody
is...
Somebody reads it to him.
There's a significant lack of world leadership. And the thing that these young people in Hong Kong, they clearly want world attention. But, I mean, there's so much fire. Like, so much of the world is sort of on fire, literally and figuratively. It's hard to get that attention. And it's also kind of hard to figure out what can be done. China is so powerful. So much of our economic interest is tied to this. And that's something else that wasn't mentioned. It's the trade war between China and the U.S. And I would have thought that if Trump could be dependent on one thing, which would be to join the protesters because it would give him a chance to stick it to China. But... that's not how it
went. He's holding back for now, but we'll see.
Anyway.
Something again for a future show.
And that's the way it is.
I think you just recited what is going to be our future shows for the next 2 months. That when we're not talking elections, we're going to be covering like all of those.
Yeah, probably. It was like one of those sneak preview reels, like coming up this season on
coming
open sources.
Coming soon to anyway. Open sources. Yeah. All this stuff. And hopefully less hammering. But supposedly by next week, they're going to have it wrapped up. But I'm not so sure.
From what I understand, they're going to hammer hard all weekend, and then Monday will be
24 hours a day.
So don't come to the University Center starting tomorrow
evening. It looks like a war zone or, you know, one of those contamination scenes where they put plastic up everywhere. But
yeah, it looks like Contagion downstairs.
It looks like Contagion with hammers.
Anyway, that's it for this week's episode of the show, and we'll be back full time as we head into election season, so stay tuned for more. If you want to stay connected to us, go to our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And we have a repeat. We have a repeat.
Sounds
of
good to me,
DJ
rebate.
Sounds good to me at the top of the hour here on CFRU, 93.3 Hammering FM, excuse me. CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. with hopefully 25% less hammering. Let's be real about this. We'll see you next week.